Hello and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about Campbell's Soup.
Which, I mean, to me this seemingly came out of nowhere. Was this a you suggestion, Lauren?
Yeah, well, because I was thinking about it. It being the holiday season here in the world, I guess. We just had Thanksgiving here in the United States, and so I was thinking about green bean casserole, and I was like, what's up with that soup stuff? How does that happen? I mean, it's also, you know, like the weather has turned, and so I've just been craving nothing but soup. Soup and like vindaloo, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a little behind the scenes, listeners, this is our second time recording this episode.
It is. Yeah. My recorder decided it didn't like us. So, you know, it happens very occasionally. We have to come in here and pretend that we didn't already say all of these things.
Yeah.
Try to keep it fresh.
Yeah, well, we definitely. And I hope we can recapture the jokes, the soup jokes. But I just like knowing as a listener that there's a like Easter egg. There's a lost Campbell's Soup episode.
Well, we have, I mean, unless you deleted it, we do have your audio from it.
We do. We could post that and compare. I think that'd be great. It's just me in awkward silence.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I am into it. I'm into it. I'm also into soup, and researching this episode, I did really appreciate all the condensed puns in the titles of the articles.
Yeah.
The condensed story of Campbell's Soup or what have you. So I'm gonna have to think of something different.
Oh, okay.
For the title of this episode.
All right. I like that you're challenging yourself, and I like that you're outing yourself too. So
if you
wind up with a condensed pun for the title, we'll know that you were just lazy.
Yeah, it does happen, I have to admit. And sometimes, you know, the magic just isn't there. Puns have got to come from a very specific place.
They do.
And, I mean, Lauren, you're the only one who knows all of the puns I've made. And so you've witnessed this firsthand. Sometimes I got a lot. Sometimes I'm like, I got nothing. I don't know.
Listeners, believe me when I say that her pop lyric puns are always the best. Those are usually the ones that make me laugh out loud and startle my cats.
Yes. I'm a big fan of those as well. And I love, too, how they're so obscure. Like,
yeah.
We almost never pick them because they're so obscure. But I've got to make them, nonetheless. So I have a really fond place in my heart for Campbell's Soup. Growing up, if I got sick, my mom would she'd warm up some of the Campbell's homestyle chicken noodle soup.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause I preferred that one for some reason.
Sure. Yeah.
And also the chocolate milkshakes, chocolate ice cream milkshakes,
right,
as I've mentioned.
Right. That
was sort of my combo, my get well combo. And I really, really liked the vegetable beef, too. And she did use cream of mushroom soup in a lot of her recipes. She, like we talked about, I think, in our chicken tetrazzini episode.
Oh, right. Yeah. A casserole ingredient, sure.
Exactly. After Thanksgiving or Christmas, we had all that leftover turkey. She would make turkey tetrazzini, and that had cream of mushroom in it. And it was so good. I loved it. And then in college, I graduated to chunky Campbell's soup.
And, you're like, I'm a grown-up now. I need a chunkier soup.
I need to get through my college day. I need something chunky to sustain me. And I still eat those from time to time. I legitimately love soup, everybody. I love it all the time. It can be hot outside, especially when stressed. I love it. Although, right now, probably for 2 years, generally my real jam has been pho and ramen.
Ooh.
That's what I want all the time.
Yeah. Oh, those noodles. They're just so noodly.
Oh, so savory, so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, still a big soup person. I just made a batch of collard greens, black-eyed peas, sausage soup.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh,
it was so good. It was so easy. It was wonderful. and then cauliflower, kale, and sausage soup, which is a pretty regular go-to in my household. And I think they last like a week. Like you can make this big pot and it lasts forever.
Yeah, yeah. I don't cook a lot, but if I'm, especially from scratch, but if I'm going to, one of the things I really love making is like chicken soup from a chicken, like get a raw chicken. And I feel like a magician every time. I'm like, I am a wizard. I have made soup from a chicken. And it's so good. Oh, man. Yeah. I've been eating soup for the past couple of days because I've just been on a big soup bender. Yeah, I'm just like.
The soup bender. Remember we went to Super Saiyan? Shout out to Super Saiyan in Orlando. I hope they're still going. It was a Dragon Ball Z themed
pho restaurant.
Pho shop. Yeah. It was awesome. I was trying to take pictures in there. I wish I had.
I might have a couple photos. I'll have to dig through my phone. I think we went specifically for the like pun and the Dragon Ball theme. But it was good pho. If you're ever in Orlando and
this
you
is
want
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of kind of the wizard, feeling like a wizard, me and my roommate in college, I usually did the cooking. And one time she was sick and she was like, I need soup. And I just threw in a bunch of things to make this stew. And I got to say, it looked really gross. It was like brown. But it tasted, it was cold and it tasted amazing. And ever since, we've called it Hobbit Stew. And I've tried to recreate it, but all I can remember is like, it was gross looking and it had mushrooms and potatoes.
That's not extremely specific, no.
Yeah, it's very, very vague, yeah. recently, Lauren, I was lamenting to Lauren, I was down to my last pack of ramen.
Right, yeah.
And you showed up at my house with a bag of soup.
because you had said, you were like, man, I'm just down to ramen and I don't even have that much of that left. And I was relaying this story to my friend Katya, and she just disappeared and came back with these like two big grocery bags full of canned soup. And I still don't know from whence she produced these cans of soup. But she was just like, Annie needs energy for podcasting. Here, take them. Give them to Annie. I was like, okay.
Well, I very much appreciated it. All the soups were enjoyed. So tell her thank you. Thank you, Lauren.
Oh, yeah. Anytime. Soup delivery. Happy to do it. Oh,
so much appreciation for soup deliveries. I guess this brings us to our question.
Sure. Yeah, in a roundabout way. Absolutely.
Very roundabout, as is our tradition. The Campbell Soup Company. What is it?
Well, Campbell's is a brand of soups that also, as the Campbell Soup Company, owns and operates a number of other packaged food brands. As they are fond of saying, soup is our middle name. And they are famous for those, the most famous for those soups, including lines of like inexpensive condensed soups to which you can add water in order to eat alone or add to dishes like casseroles, as we have mentioned, plus fully constituted canned soups and soups in microwave ready bowls or cups. And the Campbell's website lists 265 products.
Dang.
Right? Some of them have been discontinued and are still on the site, like for posterity's sake, I guess. Mm. I just like looked at that number and I was like, dare I do a list?
Oh, you dare.
Oh, yeah, I did. Oh, yeah, I did. This is not a complete list, but because I kind of just went through and tried to get some like some. OK, so they've got their basic categories of classic, slow kettle style, home style, not sure what the difference is. Chunky and healthy request. And then I kind of broke everything down. There was planning that went into this, y'all. So amongst all of those, you've got broth-based soups, vegetable broth-based, like old-fashioned vegetable, vegetarian vegetable, vegetable beef, and minestrone? I don't know how to
I've
say that.
I've always said minestrone, but, you know, as I've lamented frequently, being a podcaster means you realize you don't know how to pronounce things you've always thought you knew how to pronounce.
Yeah, so. Basically nothing. I feel like some episodes or some days I just spend more time looking up pronunciations than I do doing like any other part of my job.
Oh, yeah.
Like writing a script, like quick, looking up the names in that script, hours.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then you'll guaranteed still someone will write in. I'm actually from here.
Yeah.
You pronounce it this way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've always said minestrone.
There you go.
That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, however you pronounce it. Yes. There are also then chicken based soups, including chicken noodle soups, of which I counted at least 13 different types. I know, right? I mean, I know it's like a thing and stuff, but heck. Yeah. And actually, I don't think I was counting some of the branded ones, like the mm-hmm. the co-brand tie-in ones. So I think it's actually more like 15 plus. But yes, chicken and rice soups, chicken with wontons, with vegetables, chicken gumbo, chicken tortilla, Thai style, Italian wedding style, chicken quesadilla, fajita chicken, barbecue chicken and beans, buffalo style. Then you've got beef-based, beefy mushroom, vegetable beef, beef with vegetables and barley, beef noodle, golden mushroom, don't know what that is, French onion, steak and potato, sirloin burger, which throws me, pot roast, beef burrito. Cream-based, oh my gosh, cream mushroom, chicken, celery, potatoes, shrimp, onion, broccoli, bacon, asparagus, clam chowder, cheddar cheese, broccoli and cheese, fiesta nacho cheese, chicken pot pie, Philly cheesesteak, hearty cheeseburger, chicken and dumplings, chicken pot pie, beer and cheese?
Beer?
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know. Right. And then the kind of broad category of sort of like legume and potato and tomato soups, like split pea soups, your bean soups, your potato soups, your corn soups, your tomato soups, your chilies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have to say I've had a lot of these. Surprisingly, to me myself, I've had the golden mushroom, Lauren. I think it's called that because it's like yellow.
Okay.
Yellowy. And the sirloin burger is just kind of like chunks of ground sirloin. It's good. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess the words sirloin, burger, and soup all together on one package just makes me go, what?
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. I mean, plenty of these soups I've got follow-up questions about. Primarily right now for me, the cream of shrimp.
Yeah. Didn't know it existed. Did not know it existed.
You know, I didn't know it existed, and yet I'm not surprised to find that it does.
Oh, not surprised. Sense. No.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, Campbell's does more than soup, though.
They do. They do. They also make some sauces, some gravies like au jus.
Yeah, and they own the salsa line Pace, the pasta sauce line Prego V8, Pepperidge Farm Goldfish, all kinds of things.
Yeah, yeah. They own Lance Snacks, you know, like the little snack cracker sandwiches things. Yeah, Snyder's of Hanover, those pretzels, Cape Cod. Potato chips and popcorn, Kettle Brand snacks, Late July snacks, Snack Factory pretzel chips, Pop Secret popcorn, Emerald Nuts, Pacific Foods, Plum Kids Foods, Well Yes soups, Swanson's, SpaghettiOs.
Never forget.
Never forget.
SpaghettiOs.
And Raviolios as well.
Raviolio? Now, that wasn't in our first go round. That is a genuine surprise for me.
I was saving it.
All right, good, 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 good. You got me. Well, I'm going to try to get you with this question. What about the nutrition?
Oh, y'all, it really depends. There's 265 different kinds of soup here. Read your labels. Note that many flavors are available in lower sodium and or lower fat varieties. And I will say that although the sodium in these soups is often pretty high, the creamy style soups are perhaps surprisingly low in fat. They tend to use alternate science ingredients to create those creamy flavors and textures. So,
interesting, mm-hmm. interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, as Laura knows, I recently had a microwave mishap that I incorrectly blamed on a creamy style soup.
Don't think that was it.
No. Well, my microwave was doing some poltergeist nonsense, and I'm determined that we needed to do a microwave episode now so I can get to the bottom of this mystery. But it seems that the creamy soup I was microwaving is not the cause.
Probably not. I mean, maybe the soup was haunted.
Did you give me haunted soup for it?
It really wouldn't surprise me if Katya had haunted soup. If you're listening, I'm sorry. That wouldn't surprise me.
This is a throwback to our long desired haunted food episode that we just can't find enough information on. Maybe one day.
Anyone knows about any haunted food items, the only one that we know about is that packet of pasta.
Yeah, well, a listener wrote in about that pie, so that's two.
Oh, right, okay.
Well, yeah, we need more.
We need more than two.
Episode. We need more than two, yes. So keep that in mind. We do have some numbers for you.
Oh, gosh, we do.
Yeah, Campbell's is the biggest name in soup and accounts for 70% of the American soup market.
Supposedly, 80% of American households have, at this very moment, a Campbell's soup product in their pantry.
Yeah, I feel like my mom has a whole shelf of just chicken broth. It's just chicken broth for other things she's going to like cook with it.
Yeah.
Got to have that chicken broth shelf. In 2006, sales reached $743 million, but another number I found put 2020 sales at $8.691 billion.
Yeah, I strongly suspect that $743 million was either sales from like one specific arm of the company, or that the source actually meant profits, not sales. And probably that profits thing, because I saw elsewhere that that profits starting like in the early 21st century were pretty regularly around $1 billion a year. So that's it. The, you know, sources on the internet, humans get things wrong sometimes. We all do. It's okay.
We all do. This is the truth.
Another thing we're just taking on faith, the Campbell's Soup Company says that every year they go through 300 million pounds of tomatoes, 40 million pounds of chicken, and 37 million pounds of pasta.
Whoa.
Yeah. I didn't translate that into metric, because the answer is it's a lot. It's just a bunch.
It's a big number.
Yeah.
That we can say with certainty. However, the company has struggled recently with us dang millennials. The millennials.
Every time.
Meddlesome millennials. and debt after a series of unprofitable purchases of other companies, which we will be talking about a little bit in our history section.
We will, and we're going to get into that. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, Campbell's condensed soup line launched in 1897, though the first can of ready-to-eat tomato soup was introduced in 1895. But let's step back a bit.
Okay.
The year 1869. The place, Camden, New Jersey. The players, fruit seller Joseph Campbell and ice box manufacturer Abraham Anderson. They came together to form the Anderson and Campbell Preserve Company. But by 1877, Campbell bought out Anderson's shares in the company due to a difference in opinions about the direction the company should go. After that, Campbell expanded the products the company offered to include sauces like ketchup and salad dressing, but the best-selling product was ready-to-serve beefsteak tomato soup. And the tomatoes that went into that soup were grown by local farmers. Campbell was replaced as president of the company by Arthur Dorrance of the rich Bristol, Pennsylvania Dorrance family, which I loved in all the sources. They acted as if I should be very impressed and absolutely know who that was, yeah, what that
yeah.
meant.
Yeah, they're like oh, Dorrance of the Bristol Dorrances. Yeah, clearly. That's right.
Yes, so Arthur Dorrance replaced Campbell after Campbell retired in 1894. He hired his nephew, Dr. John T. Dorrance, not Jack Torrance, which I kept making that mistake yesterday.
One of these was in The Shining. The other
yes.
had a PhD my brain, in chemistry.
totally melted down. And I was like, Jack, John, Torrance, Dorrance, what's this? But I recovered and here I am. So the salary wasn't as good for a PhD in chemistry, I'm sure. It was $7.50 a week. And Dorrance had to provide his own lab equipment. But he took the job and he was integral in catapulting Campbell's soup into the public eye.
Oh, yeah.
At the time, soup was cheap to make, but costly to ship. Dorrance, looking to cut cost, figured out that by cutting out the weighty ingredient of water to create condensed soup, he could save 20 cents a can. So that's exactly what he did.
Yeah. And he also had this team of engineers go in and observe the work on the factory floor and then calculate the optimal procedures, the optimal like time and process for all of them, and the wages for each individual procedure.
Yeah. And gave those tomato farmers instructions on the type of seeds to use, the amount of fertilizer, and when it should be added. And all of this to great success. According to at least one source, they were selling an annual 16 million cans by 1904.
And they went national in 1911.
By 1922, their company was so synonymous with soup, they officially incorporated it into their name. They were also aggressively advertising. They had street card placards, ads in magazines, and they were among the first companies in the U.S. to advertise on radio and television.
Magazines like Good Housekeeping, radio like Amos and Andy, and then TV a little bit later on, like Lassie and Peter Pan. So their Mm-mm Good slogan was introduced on the radio in 1931.
Well, dang.
Right? Right?
That is a long-lasting slogan.
I know. Wow. I'm impressed.
Yeah. They did a lot of impressive stuff with their advertising, which we're going to talk about more. At its height, the Camden Cannery was producing 10 million cans a day.
I don't understand that number. It's pretty wild.
I don't either. And this was particularly like based on season. So it's not like they were doing this all year, but
sure.
There'd be like seasonal upswings in soup. And yeah. During that time, 10 million cans.
Oof.
Wild. Yes. But this level of success was not without issues. The workers were extremely micromanaged in terms of pay. They were overworked. And the environment itself that they worked in was loud and hot and not infrequently unsafe. All these factors culminated in a spontaneous strike in 1934. In 1940, the employees secured union recognition. Over the next few decades, the local papers covered various conflicts between the company and its employees and the company's attempts at circumventing the demands of their employees by building factories in different locations and hiring lower-paid laborers.
Yeah, this would go on for decades. The employees would win a strike in 1946, but lose one in 1968. Just continual ongoing labor disputes.
Incidentally, 1934 was the same year that now classic flavors were introduced. chicken noodle and cream of mushroom.
Oh.
Let's talk can design.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Originally, the labels of these soups were blue and orange, designed by John Dorrance. But only a year later, the treasurer and general manager of the company, Herberton L. Williams, got them to switch it to the iconic red and white. The reason for the change? Williams was really impressed with the color of the Cornell football team's uniforms after attending a game.
Love this. They apparently Cornell had just gotten these spiffy new uniforms that were this really beautiful carnelian red and white. And he was just like, that's it. That's it looks so sharp. It's gonna look sharp on a can. Yeah.
Well, he was right, you know, forget Auburn colors. Time for Cornell. I guess also University of Florida.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Blue and orange is one of those classic like power. Power.
Complimentary colors. Yeah. I remember those art lessons.
Yeah, like on Tide and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm. Okay. Meanwhile, the cursive font on the can was allegedly modeled after founder Joseph Campbell's signature, meant to give a homemade vibe that would appeal to housewives. The center medallion was added to the design in perhaps 1898. And there were a couple of different variations of it until they pretty much settled on a design in 1900 after they won a medal at that year's Paris Exposition Universelle. It has changed a little bit throughout the years, but generally it's remained that design.
Yeah, yeah.
More advertising stuff. The Campbell's Kids. I totally forgot about the Campbell's Kids.
Yeah. Oh, I feel like I haven't seen these in so long, but y'all have definitely also seen these at some time in your past. Like there are these kind of these very like cabbage patch looking kind of designs. Yeah.
And this whole thing goes back to 1904, and it was the brainchild of writer and illustrator Grace Wiedersheim Drayton. Her husband was working on an advertising layout for Campbell's Soups, and she added a sketch of her children. And the Campbell's ad agency loved it. They like trademarked it immediately. Over the years, the Campbell's Kids went from being just regular kids to kids modeled after various professions, from sailors to police officers. Drayton continued sketching these kids for 20 years, and they were so successful, they were even made into dolls.
Huh.
Yeah, the company that produced these dolls got two patents for the clothes of the dolls.
Okay, sure.
Yes, and I found a salt and pepper shaker's tire.
Oh.
Yeah. When I was doing the research for this, I found not one, but two listings for salt and pepper shakers modeled after these Campbell's Kids. So
wow,
they're out there. They exist. During the Great Depression, home cooks got the idea to use tomato soup to make a sort of spiced cake. And apparently it was good. Good enough that Campbell's Test Kitchen released the recipe with their own take on it in 1940. And this was during war rationing, which during all of that, soup cake was a pretty popular thing.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Campbell's was doing a lot of kind of R&D of recipes at that point. They opened their official test kitchens. Capitalized, thank you, in 1941 for further concepts like this. The company would go public on the New York Stock Exchange in 1954. And then, in 1955, Campbell's Home Economics Department employee Dorcas Riley developed the recipe for green bean casserole. She was looking for a simple, quick, inexpensive side dish, using things that, like, most people would have on hand, and that would, A, incorporate some vegetables, and, B, you know, sell some heckin' condensed soup.
Mm-hmm.
And the recipe hasn't changed a lot since 1955. It's just cooked green beans, condensed cream of mushroom soup, milk, soy sauce, although I think it was originally Worcestershire sauce. Anyway, ground pepper, and fried onions on top, preferably French's fried onions in a can.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. this was originally called green bean bake, And the recipe was introduced to the public on cream of mushroom soup cans in 1955, then got a print ad campaign in the early 60s. And it was initially intended as like an everyday dish, but over time would morph into this like winter holiday staple that we know today. And the company estimates that Americans make 20 million per year, every year for Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Like to the point that fully half of the company's cream of mushroom soup sales occur in November through January.
Wow. Well, this is so interesting to me because we don't have, this is not a holiday thing house at all.
Huh.
No.
Okay.
Never has been. But my mom would make it for potlucks, and I would feel this sort of embarrassment when I was a young kid because kids, at least in my orbit, they weren't fans of the green bean casserole.
Oh.
And they'd be like, who about the green bean casserole? And I'd be like, oh, no. But I really liked it. To this day, like, I can't remember the last time I had it, but I'll still get cravings for it.
Yeah.
And, like, I have to be in the mood because sometimes I'm like, that is absolutely not what I want. But sometimes I'm like, that is what I
that
need.
That is exactly it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a very nostalgic thing for me. I honestly can't remember. I think I had a family member who made it for either Thanksgivings or Christmases. It would have been Thanksgivings. Yeah. I we did this very non-traditional Thanksgiving for just me and my roommates this year. We had salmon and greens and stuff. And I mean, it was really good, but like, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, this is fine. Like, this is great. I like these foods too. I don't need like traditional Thanksgiving foods. And then like the week after when I was at the grocery store, I bought things to make stuffing and green bean casserole and pumpkin pie. It's just like, yep, nope, that's what's up. So I have the ingredients sitting in my kitchen.
Well, let me know how it goes. I have been craving it recently. It's good stuff.
It's just salty goodness.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I also did want to mention in terms of like other combinations when you think of Campbell's soup, I think we would be remiss if we did not acknowledge the grilled cheese and tomato soup combo.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. That is grilled cheese, yeah. Though. I mean,
yeah.
Grilled cheese and anything is a pretty good combination, but.
Oh, I miss grilled cheese. And, you know, I forgot that I really was determined to like grilled cheese and tomato soup for a long time as a kid because it seemed like a mature thing. I don't know why I thought that. I have no idea why I thought that was the case.
Okay.
But, you know, I eventually got there. I didn't like tomato soup for a while, but I got there.
Yeah.
But my old university, Georgia Tech, they would do grilled cheese and tomato soup nights.
Oh.
I think every Thursday they would do it. And it was legit.
You
could
customize
your grilled cheese.
Oh, I want that right now.
I'm like, the craving.
I'm like, why am I podcasting? Why am I not eating grilled cheese and tomato soup? I don't even have good cheese to make a grilled cheese with. You do. You still have that like block of cheese,
yeah.
Right? That like
I have a block of Kraft cheese ready to go. It's time.
Oh, that makes the best grilled cheese sandwiches. Okay, anyway, we're...
Yes. Yes. You're welcome for that craving, but let's pivot. Let's hard pivot to the world of art.
Hey, grilled cheese and tomato soup is art as well. Thank you.
You're right. I think that any delicious meal is an art form.
There you go.
So, yes. Yes. So maybe a soft pivot then. So, from 1961 to 1962, the Campbell's condensed soups cans were immortalized in the art world when Andy Warhol produced 32 silk-screened paintings of them, one for each flavor on the market at that time. So, this is the stuff of art legend. I think there are at least 50 different versions of how this came about.
Okay.
Apparently... He got the idea after he was lamenting his lack of recognition in the art world to a decorator named Muriel Latou, maybe? And she said something like, you've got to find something that's recognizable to almost everybody. Something you see every day that everybody would recognize. Something like a can of Campbell's soup. And the story goes, he was inspired after this. He went across the street and bought all these soups. And like in recent interviews, he said he loves Campbell's soup and he still eats it. But you know, I've definitely seen this. I can't remember what museum I was at, but I've seen the, it was the tomato soup one. Yeah. And it is interesting, this sort of whole, the Campbell's condensed soup becoming this symbol of American consumerism, of this fast, cheap, easy lifestyle.
Yeah, the mass production.
Right.
And yeah. Huh.
Yeah. It's very iconic. I mean, the can is iconic and it's extremely recognizable. So
it is.
Yeah.
You know, thank goodness for those Cornell uniforms.
Thank goodness for that. Speaking of
football, yes. So Campbell's Chunky Soups were introduced in 1970, and it would later, a bunch later in 1997, become the official soup sponsor of the NFL.
Again, I learned this yesterday, and I'm still, it still makes me chuckle because I'm just imagining like these big buffy football players. You don't say Buffy, do you? But
no,
I'll say it.
That's a different, sure.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean. Like drinking soup out of the can and being like, send me in, coach. I've got my strength. I'm ready. It's just a funny image to me.
Yeah. No, and I love that there's a soup sponsor. This
yes.
it rings the same way that official state snack or, you know, yeah. does.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. The company replaced fresh Camden tomatoes with industrially made tomato paste out of California in 1977. And this allowed the company the freedom to move to wherever they wanted.
And not have to deal with the continued labor disputes at the Camden location.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Camden produced its last can in 1990 and the factory was gone a year later.
Yeah. Yeah. They imploded it. And from what I understand, though, at least one of the water tower drums that stood over the Camden factory and was fashioned to look like a can of Campbell's soup does remain, having been moved from that original location to somewhere on the Campbell's Camden campus. Because, yeah, although they imploded the plant, they did keep the global headquarters there in Camden.
See, listeners, if any listeners has pictures of this, I need you. I know I could just Google it, but I need you. I need your on-the-ground experience and pictures. Because this is absolutely one of my very favorite things. I love thinking about if an alien was dropped onto this earth after humanity is long gone, what would they think? They just see this soup can.
This giant soup can lying in like a corporate lawn somewhere.
Questions.
Apparently,
I have questions.
Apparently, you can see it from the highway. I'm not sure. Y'all,
well,
let us know.
That's why we need you. This is a very important mission, and we need you. Starting in the 80s, Campbell's cut the salt in their products by up to 45%, but drastically reduced sales meant that they quickly reversed that decision.
Yeah, and like kind of a lot has been written about this, and I was delighted to read all about it. So, okay, the issue here was kind of two-pronged. So like they weren't advertising or even like marketing this drop in sodium in these products. And like, all right, so like first of all, like if you're buying condensed soup to use in a casserole, that is a classic recipe that you are making, maybe just for family, but often, yeah, for this potluck or for this holiday meal. And our resistance to change in that kind of classic recipe is so intense. Like it has this one flavor and that is the flavor and you do not mess with it. and like furthermore, like if you don't tell consumers about this, like probably the recipes came out tasting different and they did not like it.
Yeah.
So people were mad with a Y. They're like, and screw that soup. And secondly, you know, the company was so keyed in to this narrow idea of making healthier, soups by reducing the sodium. They were like, well, sodium is bad. Make healthier soups by reducing the sodium. That they didn't like see like the forest for the salt trees. The real movement, the real health movement that was gaining momentum in the 80s was about using fresh ingredients, because processing those ingredients like destroys some of the flavor and texture of the original food, and then you have to cover it up by adding salt and sugar and fat and whatever. And so, like, just reducing the salt doesn't change the fact that it's still this highly processed product.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But so yeah, so they went back to their full salt category, but they would come out with their Healthy Request line in 1991 as sort of a pivot, sort of smarter pivot.
Yeah,
on that
if you're looking for this thing,
yeah,
here's the product for you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, make your casseroles with our
yeah, as much classic sodium as possible.
Exactly.
Also, in 1990, they produced their 20 billionth can of condensed tomato soup.
Wow. Yeah, that's too big a number for me.
Yeah, I can't. I stop at 11 billion cans.
Yeah. Up until 11 billion, you've got it. But otherwise, I don't know. I am curious about who keeps track of these things.
Right, but. Right. Is it just like one guy? Are they like, is like, hey, Sean, like, and he's like, I'm counting.
Sean is dead, Lauren.
I'm sorry to say. Oh, no. Did you just kill off this imaginary Campbell's employee?
He died when he got to 20 billion cans.
His work was finally done.
Yeah, he died doing what he loved. Accomplished his mission.
Oh,
R.I.P. Sean.
All right.
Pour a can of tomato soup out for you into a bowl with my grilled cheese. Campbell's Soup to Go in microwavable cups came out in 1998. And that was a huge college staple for me.
Oh, yeah. Same.
And Soup at Hand, an even more convenient soup delivery method, was introduced in 2002. So this was like a cup, like a sippy cup of soup.
Yeah.
And then Slow Kettle Style Soups came out in 2011 and Go Soup in a Pouch in 2012. And then Campbell's released limited edition designs of the label in the style of Andy Warhol's works in the United States in 2004. And then in 2012, they partnered with Target to produce limited edition pop art style cans.
And okay, this is where I start getting a headache, because I feel like the walls of reality are breaking down. Like, this makes me deeply uncomfortable. I'm like, it was commentary about commercialism, and then you put that commentary on your commercially available product.
It never ends, Lauren. It never ends, the cycle of the Campbell soup.
It just makes me, like, itchy in, like, a place that I can't reach.
Perhaps that was the message they were trying to send. Or perhaps they totally missed the point. It could be either.
Or both.
Or both.
Gosh. Well, anyway, during the same time period, apparently they were thinking real hard about their labels around that time, because they were in the process of revamping their can design to include photo illustrations of each soup. And they spent 2 years with three firms and over 1,500 research subjects looking at consumer feedback and like neuromarketing results, like biometrics. Like they like kind of strap you down and, or they don't strap you down. I'm sure they make you comfortable, but anyway, like they show you these images and then they monitor changes in things like heart rate and skin moisture as you're looking at these different designs. And they came up with, they were like, okay, well, you know, we'll still use the red and white. We'll still have the Campbell's in the cursive font, but we're going to include this photo illustration of each soup. But the classic label remained, on three soups, the condensed versions of chicken noodle, tomato, and cream of mushroom.
This is so intense. This sounds like you walk in and you think you're getting tested for some like Clockwork Orange type, like
that's totally what
horror
I picture.
Movie. Yeah. And then you're like, what is this for? And they're like, soup.
I'm sure it wasn't that horrific. I'm sure whenever they do this, it's a very pleasant process, or at the very least, just a little bit dull, maybe.
Yeah. But. Yeah. I think it's just because when you read things like measuring biometrics and skin moisture, I usually associate that with something scary.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, that's perhaps because of my own biases.
Yeah.
And
you do watch too many horror movies. It's true.
This is fair. We can all agree. In 2013, Campbell's tried out a Campbell's K-Cup. A Campbell's K-Cup. And it did not go over well, listeners. It did not go over well.
Okay, this is also very confusing for me because I'm like, K-Cup, but with soup. And it reminds me every time I think of it, of this, there's this moment in the Magician's show that also has really confused me for years, and it just sticks with me, and I think about it sometimes because there's this moment where one of the characters is in an office, and he's never really been in an office before, and he's holding up this little K-cup labeled donut coffee, and he's like, does the donut coffee really taste like donuts? And the dude he's talking to is just like, I don't know, man, I mostly use that thing to make soup. And it kind of haunts me because I'm like, how do you make soup in a... And I guess this is how.
So now we know what keeps you up at night. Magician K-cup soup-based nightmares. You know, it explains a lot, Lauren. I'm not going to lie.
I think that we have both revealed deep things about ourselves in this episode, Annie.
I think we have, to be honest. Yeah.
Whew. All right. Well, anyway, Campbell's... We're doing an episode about Campbell's here, hypothetically. tried a bunch of things in these first couple decades of the 21st century that didn't all necessarily work out super great. They bought and then later sold Bolthouse Farms and Garden Fresh Gourmet. They were trying to get into the fresh food sector and would eventually just sell it all. They were just like, no, we only make shelf-stable stuff now. It's also when they picked up brands like Pacific Foods and Snyder's. Apparently, there was a lot of hubbub about how much they paid for Snyder's. And everyone was like, really? That much? That's a bad business decision. So I don't know. I don't know if it's true. I'm not an economics human.
But speaking of hubbub, in 2015, a Campbell's commercial for Star Wars themed soup got major backlash, like a lot, because I wasn't looking for this and it came up in a lot of articles I was reading from the far right media for featuring two dads and their son. And it was especially disheartening because it was a real family.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
That's what? Love is love and soup is soup. It's fine. Just let people enjoy soup.
Yeah.
Especially Star Wars soup. Come on. If only more dads in Star Wars could enjoy soup with their sons.
Look, if you think I haven't read that fan fiction where Darth Vader gives Luke some soup after he gets a cold, you're wrong. Especially after Hoth, you know? It's like it's a whole trope.
Oh, my heck.
And did you know? Okay, well, very briefly. In Star Wars fan fiction, Vader is often called Sad Murder Dad.
Oh, well, that's true, because he is.
It's all, I mean, very accurate. I could go on and on about the terms of Star Wars fan fiction, but I won't for now.
that Star Wars themed soup is no longer with us, sadly. The product line was discontinued, but they do still do product tie-ins with Paw Patrol and Disney Princesses. So
I hear the kids love Paw Patrol.
That's what I keep hearing doing reading for these episodes.
Yeah, the food tie-ins.
Yeah.
That's how we know what's going on, only based on food product tie-ins. That's it.
It's a finger on a very specific pulse.
Yes. but it's there.
Oh, and despite us bloody millennials, sales of Campbell's products are actually up this year. What with people stocking up on easy to make shelf stable home comfort foods. Research indicates that 88% of Americans have been cooking more meals at home this year, and 46% of us are using packaged foods as part of that. Perhaps because almost half of us are willing to spend no more than 15 to 30 minutes to cook a meal. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm generally that way, but like, you know, maybe twice a week I'll put more, yeah. Especially if I use like a crock pot or something.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Campbell's has 174 recipes on their website, and they do also still print recipes on their can labels. So if you're looking for ways to incorporate more Campbell's soup into your life, you're in luck.
Well,
they're not a sponsor, perhaps.
No, they're
obviously
not a sponsor at all. And I was telling Lauren, like, I made this. I was like, what am I going to do with these ingredients? I've got this kind of soup and chicken and rice. And then I looked at the can of soup and it was cream of chicken. And there was a recipe for rice and chickpeas and cream of chicken. And I was like, oh, Eureka! And it was delicious. And only until you said this, I've been thinking I'll never be able to make that again. And now it's so obvious that I could find that, like, in 2 seconds.
Yes.
I could find that recipe.
Absolutely, you could.
So.
Also, it's probably not difficult. Like,
no,
that.
I recall it being very easy. I think you just put the ingredients in a pan and cooked it for like 30 minutes.
That's probably what it is, yeah.
Yeah. So I will look forward to that in my future. I remember it being very good.
Yeah. And I'm gonna make that green bean casserole. Oh, I'm excited about it.
Yes. Report back.
Shall do.
Yes. But for now, I guess that's what we have to say about Campbell's Soup Company the second time around.
Yes. Yes. And we do have some listener mail for you. But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
listener mail.
Good. Emily wrote, in your listener mail episode, you were confused about why it's called Boston Pizza if it's in Canada. I actually have the answer. Boston Pizza was started in my mom's hometown where my grandparents currently live. Shout out to Penticton, British Columbia. There was once a bar called Boston's Bar. I guess Boston was the owner's nickname. It was a bar in the basement of a building, and they decided to open a pizza restaurant on the main level, and they called it Boston's Pizza. At some point when it became a franchise, they dropped the apostrophe S, making it Boston Pizza. It has since spread all over Canada, and it's actually where I had my first legal drink on my 19th birthday. I can vouch for their drinks. They have lots of excellent choices, both alcoholic and not. Huh. Mystery solved!
Huh. This is great.
I love it so much. I love it because we were perplexed. We were quite perplexed by this.
And this makes a lot more sense than any other thing that I could possibly think of. And also, it is extremely obscure. Gosh, I love that.
Yeah, I love it. Because unless you happened to know that story, you would think, why is it called Boston Pizza? But now we know. Thank you, Emily.
Yes. Oh, Vivian wrote, I was a little disappointed at first to see that the new episode was about burgers. More on that later. But then you mentioned that the inspiration was Supernatural, and the fangirl in me leaped up in delight. I'm no longer as obsessed as I was a few years ago, but you can bet I returned to the fold for the series finale. I don't remember if you've done a pie episode. That would also be very fitting. On burgers. I was convinced for years that I hated burgers, and it was all the fault of the New York City public school system. The burgers we were served at lunch were tough and gray and thoroughly unappealing. It wasn't until college, when one of the dorms was grilling burgers in their courtyard, that the combination of hunger and free food and amazing smell lured me to try one again. At last, I discovered what people liked about them. It was juicy and well-seasoned and went so well with the fluffy bun. I still get them very rarely. I prefer my meat in smaller pieces and less texturally homogenous, but I no longer shudder at the thought of them. The last burger I had was a Juicy Lucy in Minneapolis this past summer while visiting my boyfriend's family. And though having the cheese inside was pretty fun, I will risk the ire of all Minnesotans and submit that the burger I had in the college dorm courtyard was juicier and better seasoned.
Oh, fighting words, fighting words.
I love it. I love it. Whenever I read something like this, like my heart starts going, like people yeah. are gonna, I'm like, oh, I'm reading something controversial. I'm only reporting what someone else wrote.
Yes, and people have written in about the Juicy Lucy and their fondness of them, and we will be reading those letters. So the Juicy Lucy will have its time.
Okay, good.
People have come in defense preemptively for it. And, you know, I got to say that, like, being outside and free, like, those kind of contextual things about burgers really do impact the flavor, I think. So I totally get it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A good, just like homemade off a grill burger.
Oh. Oh.
So
I did get a burger after this.
It was
after that episode. Oh, my gosh. That was so good.
We have
done an episode on apple pie.
On apple pie, right? We did one on meat pies.
Yes. We briefly mentioned pumpkin pie in our pumpkin episode.
Right. And of course, we went on the lovely Richard Blaze's show Food Court. And and our battle was cake versus pie. And dear listeners, I have to inform you that Annie just really beat me into the ground on that one. Fighting for pie. And I'm not mad about it. Like, I'm like, well, you know, well deserved, but holy heck.
I came on a little strong. I know I've mentioned it in a previous episode, but I think one of my proudest moments is Richard Blaze said, "You might be a little overprepared." I was like, "No, never pie."
I think We were a level of researched for that battle that was perhaps surprising.
Yes. I mean, not to us and not to you, probably.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Like, if y'all are listening to this, you understand that this is how we are.
Yeah. Yes. But definitely check it out. It was a very fun, stressful experience for us, but definitely a good listen.
Yes.
And yes, thank you to these listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.